All right, hello everyone, and welcome to...
Welcome to Defense of the Patriots! I'm your host, Baron Proud. This is a power metal podcast talking about freedom call.
And with me is Ursinity and Skrunk. How are you, Ursinity and Skrunk?
I am alarmed, primarily. I am happy to be here on your heavy metal, power metal podcast.
I said like five words and you couldn't get like the one right.
Well, when you sing them, it becomes harder to
decipher. Okay. Well, we'll subtitle it so you can let's look at the subtitles while you listen to the podcast.
Yeah. And we also have Skrunk here. I'm very excited. Skrunk, I think, have you been on the show before?
Like eight times. No, I've never been on the show and I've never listened to the show. So
awesome.
Oh my God. Thank you. Best friend. Like, what the fuck?
Thank you for your honesty.
I've watched it once.
All right. Well, I mean, that's one more time than a lot of people, I suppose.
The majority of humans, yeah, I'd say.
So
less than my mom does. Say that right now.
So for context, Skrunk is someone we bring up on the podcast all the time. He has casted in-house before, plays in in-houses, regular guy. But more importantly, he is on our team, Hakuna Marana, with it's me, Proud, Skrunk, Vafa, Flub, and Fafnir. So we have a six-man roster. As we've talked about before, we don't need to hammer on about that. No pun intended. But we brought on Skrunk this fine episode because we want to do something special with three heroes that we're not going to talk about yet. It's probably spoiled in like your podcast title, so hopefully you didn't read that. But before we get into that stuff, we are going to talk about our week in Dota. And let's start.
I'm going to start because I'm me. And my week's been pretty good. I haven't been playing too much. I've been doing a lot of schoolwork, but you know, whatever. And I've been playing a lot of heroes. We've been playing some Chaos Knight, and I've been playing more Chaos Knight, and that hero's going good. I was just talking to Roland about like what I've been playing. It's been like carries I'm comfortable with, like Chaos Knight, Juggernaut, Sven, Tiny, and like Luna I feel pretty comfortable with now. And we just like played some matches a bit ago, and I played Lone Druid mid again, and we were against their only good player as Lone Druid mid, and I fucking beat his shitty, stupid ass. And that felt great. So Lone Druid's good still. Okay, next person.
All right, I'll go. So
okay,
we started off the week with a Timbersaw win for like 10 MMR, and then we followed that up with a Legion Commander loss for 30 MMR. So that was good. And after that, I was like, wow, Proud can't play Tiny. So I spammed three Tiny games. And I won all of them. Just kidding, Proud. I loved you. Now I went back and I watched the replay, and I was playing horribly. But I mean, so
we're talking. Was there a Sven game that I lost that you, or a Tiny game that I lost that you were like, wow?
Yeah. I was on Legion, and you're on Tiny, and you like fucked up like four or five T-bits. But I mean,
oh my God.
That was a bad game overall.
But
I was 8-8. Everyone else was feeding like a motherfucker.
No, I was feeding too. I played really bad. I watched the replay. I like.
I did fine. I was the only one with a decent diamond speed.
Dude, you were so farmed. You had like 85 last hits at 10 minutes, and then like you were playing really well, and then you just kind of fucked up your combos and like it's okay.
Twice.
It happens.
No one had any CC. Our team sucked.
I ran in and fed. Yeah, it was mainly the draft. Like honestly, the draft was not good, and I ran in and fed like right before I got my blink, like a bunch of times, so that was stupid, and I was playing stupid. So I tilted hard, and I wasn't enjoying Dota, but then I decided I'm going to play some solo queue, and I played three games of Tiny and a Sand King game, and I won, and then I lost a Tiny game because I was very tired, and I also played Tiny quite a bit. And then
fucked up a lot that game. Piece of shit.
And then I played a Vistage game and a Beastmaster game, and I won those with the team, so... That's it.
All right. So, you know, could have been worse. So for context, Skrunk, what, like, being that we talk about our week in Dota every week, for context, what are like your key heroes and roles that you play since you've never been on the show before?
I don't even know, honestly. Never played.
I just play a lot of shit. Yeah. I play offlane for the team, but then I like to play support, and I like to play like Tiny mid and Tiny carry. And like co-op as a core, but I mostly just play offlane and freaking support, and then those two heroes as like cores. But I play a lot of everything. So
that's good. That's definitely, Skrunk is a player that when I think of Skrunk, I think of very specific heroes. I think of Visage, Tiny, and Quap, and Viper, definitely Viper, because Skrunk is a, like, you know, a lot of, like Skrunk said, he's not a mid player for our team, but I feel like every mid player has certain heroes that, like, they hate playing, but they will agree to do it under duress of, like, if we lose this game, we're going to lose 30 MMR, or, like, oh, we're playing 80-12 or something. And Skrunk and Fafnir are the only two people I think I've met in my entire life that are like, oh man, I'd love to play Viper. That sounds like so much fun. Please let me pick Viper. So that's Skrunk for you, context.
Yeah, it is fun. You, like, shoot poison at people and they have to run away from you. And you kill them and you get ultra kills. It's fun.
I'm cringing just thinking about, like,
I'm sure there's some people that are listening that also like to play Viper, so...
Well,
I'm not alone.
I appreciate Viper pickers because I never wanted to do it, but I like having Viper on my team some games. Not currently, though, because the hero is not that good right now. Anyway, my week in Dota has consisted of primarily team games with you guys, of course. A lot of Winter Wyvern. I've been playing Nyx Assassin a little bit again after last week's episode. That was a good time, so I've picked another couple Nyx games. Been playing more Invoker. I think I talked about that last week. Invoker is a hero that, you know, I haven't been playing. I didn't play for a while because, you know, Dota hipster, haha, whatever. But now I've been getting back into it ever since I bought the cape. And here's fun, and I'm glad to not be rusty on him. I played a Shadow Demon game, and I actually won that earlier today. That was fun. I also played a game earlier today with somebody who listened to the show, which is surprising because he was like 4,500 or something. And generally, I run into people in unranked that are like, oh, you know, I listen to whatever. But I was very impressed. His name was Sneaky Arab. So I don't necessarily approve of the name for the context of the show. But I feel the need to shout out that nice young fellow, I'm sure. I started playing Ricky also. So we're not playing Ricky for the show yet. But Ricky is the scourge of this patch, I feel. Do you guys agree? Like, four position Ricky is absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, fuck that guy.
He's pretty annoying. And, like, I don't see him pick that often, but I actually played with Zach the other day and he played Ricky and it was, like, really abusive.
So. Yeah. That's Ricky, like, I thought it was just, like, not necessarily a meme strat, but I thought it was like one of those like niche picks where like somebody's a Ricky specialist and like they just like the hero's better now, whatever. But like I just started dabbling and like playing a game or two of the hero, and like the hero is just wild. Like, it's so good. Cloud, I mean, I've been evangelizing Cloud as like one of the best abilities in Dota for like years, it feels like, but definitely confirmed. Cloud, incredible ability. So Ricky, I felt bad about it. Like, The hero is pretty gross, honestly. Anyway, you know, Dota's been basically the same for me. We've been winning a lot as a team, which is a good thing for our team, but it's a bad thing because I'm superstitious and I feel like we're going to go on a huge losing streak soon. And yeah, it's you know.
Is there like no way to make you happy? Like, that was the dumbest thing you've ever said in your life.
I'm happy now. I'm just saying I'm like,
it's like we're winning a lot, but it kind of sucks, honestly. I would prefer to be losing a lot. That way the lose streak would happen right now. Like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I want to just get it over with.
What?
Well, because at least sometimes it's like,
what's
oh, I'm 50-50.
What's the next topic?
So for our episode today and for our combo, rather, and our segment, we're going to be doing two things that are attached. Last week, we went over aggro duos, and that was a good time. So this week, we have brought Skrunk on, obviously, to talk about aggro tri-lanes, which is something that we like to run as a team occasionally I think we're pretty successful with them. Occasionally, it doesn't work.
That should be in every team's pocket. It is a unique laning situation that deals with a variety of game states. You may look at a draft and you say, shit, we don't match up well against this under the standard conventions of Dota Warfare. You know, you look at like fucking, what is it, like 17th century fucking Europe, they're all lining up each other like, we will be the defensive tri-lane against your offlaner, and you will be the defensive tri-lane against our offlaner with one person mid and one person mid. Like, sometimes that doesn't, like, they may outdraft you if you do that, but if you're like, well, actually, our tri-lane's fighting your tri-lane. Then they won't see that shit coming. That's the strat.
Yeah. So to continue a historical metaphor, warfare-wise, it's basically like everybody's like, all right, we're going to be in castles and stuff, and castles defend against onslaughts, and then the Mongols show up, and they're like, hey, that doesn't apply to us, and then they take all your stuff. So it's that's what the aggro tri-lane does.
Like, they have a castle, and you have a castle, but you decide to fight them, and now your castle is, like, right next to their castle.
Yeah, and then, like, you throw a bunch of dead animals into their castle, and you poison their wells and steal their river. Food. Yeah.
You and open your gate, and it leads to a wall because you didn't plan very well.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's an underfarmed specter inside the wall.
Yeah, the main part is you starve out their specter.
Yeah, that's pretty sure that's how England won all those wars. Yeah. Anyway, like Proud said, aggro tri-lanes are a thing that.
Do you agree that Spectre is a French ghost?
I thought Spectre was PA in like an alternate universe or something.
I don't care. Can we agree that Spectre is a French ghost? Like, I mean, Spectre had to be Spectre is either British or French or like Norwegian, but probably French.
I mean, in my game, everybody's Korean, so I can't tell the accents.
Okay, so she's a French ghost. Next topic.
All yes, I know I is that.
Continue.
We got that, two to one, so you lose democracy.
Okay, that's fine. All I know is that Luna is my Scottish queen. Anyway,
that was so funny.
Thank you. Aggro tri-lanes are a really, really nice thing to have in your repertoire, like Proud said, and they're not common, I would say, in a lot of like middle to lower tier brackets, especially in like amateur team context. And you can really throw people off if they're not acclimated to playing against aggro tri-lanes, or if you draft like an ambiguous draft that like suddenly your fifth pick is like an aggro tri-lane. Or even like if you're like you get into the game, you're like, oh, this is an aggro try, and that'll really mess people up. So again, like Proud said, like it's super valuable because I know 80-12 season is here, so we've got a lot of amateur teams running. Every amateur team don't necessarily run the aggro try we're talking about today, but run or at least practice some kind of aggro try and prepare to play against aggro tries because it's a really game winning combo when it works, and even when it doesn't, you know, you tried, so whatever.
Aggro tried.
So think about the actual dynamics of an aggro tri-lane. I mean, this is going to sound like the dumbest comment in the world, but is the opposite of a defensive tri-lane. So you want to have different heroes to accomplish different goals, right? You're trying to put pressure, so you're going to put, generally, you're going to put much more aggressive heroes with stuns and with nuking abilities and with abilities to pressure the tower compared to, you know, heroes that you would stereotypically pick in a support role when you are running a defensive tri-lane. Like, you know, you might pick, let's see, like Shadow Demon, which we ran recently. Like, that's a really good hero for a defensive lane because, you know, you can disrupt and etc. But in an aggressive lane, situationally, it's fine. Like, there are certain combos like Shadow Demon, Lina. But in general, you know, that's a more defensive hero, or like a Dazzle or an Omni Knight or something. So
you can run like Shadow Demon, Slardar lanes in the aggro, which is pretty decent. But overall, like, I agree with you. He's not great unless you have set up.
You have way less, like, with the thing with the with an aggressive tri-lane versus like a defensive, when you're talking about, you know, just like, well, what's going to happen in the skirmishes is anytime you have a skirmish with the aggressive tri-lane, there's always going to be support very quickly. So you need to have your actions happen. Like, if you want to kill someone, it needs to just be like on turn of a dime, blitz, boom to aggression, and you fucking hit them. Someone like Shadow Demon, who's heavy on setup, can be okay for that if it's like disrupt into like someone who can sprint like Slardar and immediately get in there and crush. You wouldn't want something like, you know, fucking Shadow Demon into like a Kunkka, and then Kunkka has to waddle over and then get like one right click in. Meanwhile, Caudle is charging a Caudle Blast. Like, that's not what you want. You want fucking snap, fucking Venge Stun into another fucking blast, etc., etc.
Yeah. You would never run more than one defensive support in an aggro tri-lane. That's for sure.
You need heavy on the burst damage, some shock and awe shit, etc.
Absolutely. And probably one of the more obvious regions where it's applicable is your core that you're running your aggro tri-lane, right? The supports, sure, you can run one defensive support, but two would be overkill. But with the carries, there are certain carries that for obvious reasons and not so obvious reasons are not at all applicable in the context of an aggro tri-lane. So probably the easiest example would be like Spectre. Spectre is not an aggro tri-lane hero. because she does not, like we said, have that immediate burst damage. She can't be super aggressive. If she is, she misses out on CS. She's very farm dependent, etc., etc. Whereas a hero like, let's see, well, for the kinds of
Chaos Knight,
he's another good one. Basically, you want these like immediate damage, very aggressive heroes. Ideally, with lockdown, Sven is another good one. Chaos Knight, similarly, like you said, has a lockdown. He has clear with Reality Rift. Ursa,
like Gyro, too.
A gap closer. Yeah,
Gyro, another perfect example. So that's the general idea. You want to really be in their face.
I feel like any core that gets phase boots is great in an aggressive tri lane.
Yeah.
Just because you can buy it from the shop right there, and like it's going to give you an immediate boost. Like every piece of that item, phase boots, is going to give you a boost to killing the enemies, which is like what you want in an aggro tri lane. So something that has a damage ability in that.
Phase boots are like notorious for being the most efficient damage you can get in the game. And if you're a hero that rushes them, like, you know, like a juggernaut or something, if you have really early boots, like if your lane is dominating, like they, let's say the enemy team wasn't expecting you to do an aggro tri lane, your tri lane trumps theirs, hence you wanting to run at an aggro. And then you get the first round of CS, so your carry is going to get boots way faster than any of them are. And then you're also going to get phase boots way faster than any of them are going to get something comparable. Like you can snowball dominate the lane just through that item alone. So I definitely agree with you that phase boots is insane. Versus like treads aren't really going to change that much. But a phase boot, like add 24 damage, you're going to get every deny, you're going to get every last hit, and you're going to run them down and they can't run away from you. Really, really good.
Your damage is going to outscale their supports. So if they try to trade CS with you or something like, or trade harass, I mean, you're going to come out way ahead. So. It's good for you.
Absolutely. So like the focus generally is on this like kind of hit and run style of just constant aggression and mobility and being able to just do things. And if they try to aggress on you, like let's say they rotate their mid or their offlane or whatever to try to like break your aggro, you want to be able to either disengage or continue to engage with that advantage you've gotten from, you know, your levels and from battering down the enemy safe laner, so the safe laner won't have typical safe lane farm. The other, I mean, I guess thinking about this, one of the common hazards with tri lanes is that you'll get under leveled, because if you aggro tri lane and it does not pan out, and obviously like you can't really pull nearly as much. I mean, you can pull the hard camp, but you can very easily get very behind if your aggro tri lane doesn't pan out. And that's, I think, I don't know if you guys would agree, but aggro tri lanes compared to last week where we talked about aggro duel lanes, aggro tri lanes are much more committal, and you've really like decided like, all right, we're gonna aggro tri lane, and if your first 15 minutes goes bad, you're gonna have a really bad time. Whereas if you run like a safe tri lane or duo lanes or whatever, like if your 15 minutes goes bad in one lane, you're not completely shafted.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And like, especially that's the case if you're running a carry that wouldn't normally be able to solo the offlane, because if your aggro tri lane doesn't work, you pretty much need to rotate out right away, because if you're just sitting three players to top, not winning that lane, it's going to be a huge waste. So you want to rotate your supports out and like go help your safe lane if you need, go pull, go gank. But, and if you run an aggro tri lane and that core can't stand there by themselves, then you're in like a lot of trouble in that lane and probably the whole game.
And for that reason, you want to pick certain carries that do have some slight ability to offlane. Like Weaver isn't too bad. Weaver needs levels pretty bad and is easy to get level starved, I would say. But like Weaver is that kind of treads between being an offlaner or offlane capable and a carry. Juggernaut is my personal favorite aggro tri lane carry, and that's most likely the hero I'm going to be playing today. For the fact that he has, you know, an on-demand a BKB from level one that he can use to get out of any situation. He's got decent move speed. He can trade with most characters. He buys phase boots early. So if a couple supports leave your juggernaut solo, he can healing ward up. He can jungle. He can blade fury to get away if he starts getting fucked by a bunch of people. You know, heroes like Lifestealer decent for that reason. Chaos Knight's nice and fast. Gyrocopter is fast enough and he can 1v2 in certain scenarios. So you really want to pick a carry that isn't going to get overwhelmed easily. Like you may think that like Drow is really good and she can definitely like aggress on people easily. But if you leave Drow solo, she's just going to fucking die. So for that reason, she's just not a very strong aggro tri laner.
Yeah, absolutely. And so while we're talking about the hazards of aggro tri laning and what you don't want to do, aggro tri lanes really modify how you're going to be playing your mid lane and your off lane, which, I mean, I guess your safe lane is your off lane now. And these are two roles that you really have to change your picks, but also your play style potentially. And those players are going to have to, they're going to get different amounts of resources, especially in my mind. I always think of when you're running an aggro tri lane, your offlaner is going to have a much more favorable matchup because it's going to be offlane versus offlane compared to offlane versus tri-lane or duo lane. So, you know, you can pick a little more greedy with your offlaner because he'll be in the safe lane. So some potential safe laners we have run before when we run aggro tri-lanes as a team or we've thought about are Slardar, Faceless Void, two heroes that are also offlaners, of course, but they do so well with farm that putting them in that position to 1v1 the enemy offlaner, they're going to get that blink dagger that much faster, or that flats or whatever, you know, you're going that much faster.
Or like if they already have their offlaner picked, you can pick a super greedy hero that just so happens to totally beat out their guy 1v1. Like if they have, like say a Tidehunter or a Timbersaw and you pick Ursa, they're just like, well, fuck.
Can't do a lot about that. Yeah. The same situation happened when the enemy team had drafted a Centaur. And we picked up a Sand King for the solo safe, and the Caustic Finale was just able to crush him. Yeah, and I mean, you can do the same thing with like a Broodmother for certain heroes if you know what they're gonna have down there, and just really abuse drafts in that way.
Yeah, and like you know, me personally, of course, I play Lone Druid all the time. But one of my favorite things is we do an aggro tri lane, and I do Lone Druid solo safe. Lone Druid used to match up against every offlaner perfectly. Now there's some that he can't do too well against, but Lone Druid, another hero, if you're part of the Bear Clan. Lone Druid is a very strong solo safe laner if your team's running aggro tri lane. Slark also. One thing about Slark, we'll just say real quick, skilling 2 points Essence Shift at level 3, that guy will fucking beat out any melee any melee in a 1v1 if you're stealing stats for 30 seconds. That is some good shit, by the way.
Yeah. So I guess this also falls back to what we were talking about earlier about throwing the enemy team off in that, you know, they pick their offlaner like, you know, Timber, Centaur, whatever, what have you. And they're expecting to be playing this hero in a situation that's like a 1v2 or 1v3. And then you're really thrown off their game. Like they're not expecting to be playing into solo safe lane Slark that has 2 points Essence Shift at level 3 or, you know, any other possible carry or core matchup.
And the thing is, you're going to be totally prepared when you're the one sending them into that 1v1 matchup. So you can give them like items that, you know, they can start like different items that are going to really accelerate them in that matchup. And win a lane that way.
One thing I'd like to add, this goes back to there's a StarCraft player, Katz, that I really like, C-A-T-Z. And he runs Root, who had a StarCraft team for a while, a Dota team. But so his deal was he would play really weird, and he would play inefficiently, but he knew all of the responses to everything he would do. And so he knew what step 2 and step 3 and step 4 were, but his enemies had to figure that out every time because they've never encountered this before. So if you're used to running aggro tri lanes, like, you know what to do if it kind of fucks up. You know how to rotate well, but they're like, okay, they're aggro tri-laning. Does that mean their supports can't rotate? Does that mean that they will? That they don't really know how to figure it out. So if you want to play aggro tri-lanes, it's definitely in your best interest to play it a few times to get a really good feel for it. That way you're way more comfortable playing it than your opponents are playing against it.
Yeah, and I mean, that goes both ways, right? If you're used to playing with it, and you know, if your team runs aggro tri-lanes all the time, if somebody aggro tri-lanes against you, then you can very easily like determine, all right, this is how we're going to beat this lane, or we're going to dodge this matchup, or we're going to rotate immediately. Like, I know our team has just dodged aggro tri lanes entirely a few times where it's like, all right, they have some unexpected aggro tri lane. It's not going great. And we just like all buy TPs at like the 2 minute mark. And it's like, all right, no harm, no foul. We're just going to get out. And so it's a very good thing to be, you know, I keep using the word, but it's a good thing to be acclimated to and have within your like, you know, your playbook. So
here's one way to know if they're going to run an aggro tri lane. Did they pick Undying as their second support, and it does it? And do you have a Spectre? If so, that is an aggro tri lane.
Yeah. Yeah, there are some very classic aggro tri lane heroes. Like you said, the Undying. Undying is running almost nothing but aggro tri lanes, I feel like, nowadays. Yeah,
these days, certainly.
Yeah. Although he's like also never really run in that situation because the hero got nerfed so hard. Mid lane, I would say, probably changes the least when it comes to if you were running an aggro tri lane. I suppose the only difference is if you are running a aggro tri lane, you have kind of committed yourself. I mean, it depends on the heroes, of course, but you have less chances to rotate towards the mid lane to save your mid lane if that mid laner is getting ganked. That's something to think about. Or if they're constantly ganking your mid laner, like if they have like a roaming whatever, Earth Spirit, Spirit Breaker, etc., then they can force your aggro trial lane to break up and, you know, move one of the supports to mid lane to help out. So that's one way to both deal with an aggro trial lane and one concern to have if you are running the aggro trial lane. So that's something.
Yeah, I would say you do need to kind of tread the line for your mid here between. You want someone with some amount of scaling. Of course, you kind of always want that. But like if you have like if you have a Puck and your aggro trial lane doesn't go so well, like you're kind of fucked. Your two lanes, like your mid lane is still going to be your mid lane. It's going to have a little less help, but it's still going to be mid lane. And then your solo side lane, I guess I'll call it, is probably going to do well. But in the event that your aggro trial lane doesn't, you don't want to have to rely on the solo side lane that maybe be a kind of strange pick. Like we added like a Sand King just because it was a good counter pick, but that's not going to carry us through the game. And then if we have someone who can get ganked really easily, like let's say we have an Alchemist and they just roam on the Alchemist, or we have, I don't know, like an Ember Spirit or a Storm Spirit that gets shit on, like that's way less desirable than let's say like a Queen of Pain or a Windrunner who can carry pretty decently into the mid and late game and also has some sort of escape that can work without a lot of help.
Yeah. One of the other things that I like to think about when we were in aggro trial lanes is I feel like aggro trial lane drafts tend to be more pointed towards either an aggro trial lane that is very push oriented and is going to be like, all right, we're going to take their T1 by 5 minutes or, you know, some other arbitrary marker before 10 minutes, like a very early push comp, like the one I'm sure we've talked about on the show before, but like the Pugna drafts, for instance, like Pugna Undying Dazzle aggro trial lane, like that kind of stuff where it's just like, all right, we're gonna push, and you open up a lot of area of the map and you deny a lot of the map to the enemy. Or there's like kill lanes and like trade farm kind of lanes where, you know, you're not necessarily gonna like push their tower down instantly, but you are going to put so much pressure on their safe lane they cannot be there.
Yeah, usually like when you run aggro, it's to punish some greedy carry that the enemy has, like a Spectre or is the classic example or something like that. So that being the case, you're generally going to have a worse late game than the enemy team when you're running an aggressive tri lane. So you're going to want to use that aggro tri lane to get kills and snowball. And the heroes that are good and aggressive are obviously better in early portions of the game. So generally, yeah, a push lineup is great with aggro. That you can take control of the map and starve them out, these types of play styles.
Yeah, one of the best ways to punish greed is by just fucking killing them and ending the game.
I'm a big fan of that. So I guess
I will say there's one brand of aggro trial lanes that I do like that isn't quite as fucking just end the game is if you do an aggro trial lane that have a Medusa solo safe. Medusa wins against a lot of heroes solo safe, and there was a team in my college league that played Medusa solo safe every single game that they could, and they just fucking trounced with it. And that's totally viable. Medusa as a solo hero, she can counter a lot of stuff. And if their tri lane is weak and your Medusa is ahead of their solo side laner, like that can be just a one game. Like they can't really come back from that potentially. So something to keep in mind.
Medusa mid's also pretty good. Like if they're running a support duo that cannot just constantly gank the Medusa, like she can subsist in lane much better than people give her credit for. Like Mana Shield is a very strong ability. Like you got to commit a lot to kill Medusa. So Medusa mid's okay if you can get away with it. All right. So on that note, I think we'll bring up our actual combo today. And the primary reason we brought Skrunk on, obviously we need a third person and Skrunk is a perfect candidate for that. But
Skrunk is indeed a person.
I am a person, yeah.
And perfect number person. Three. In addition, if you add me and you together, that's two, and then him is three, so.
Yeah, that is math.
I'll play at least one Dota hero in this game.
Okay. Hopefully. Well, the hero you're actually playing, some would qualify as multiple heroes because there's a lot of macro involved. Skrunk is our Visage Specialist. I mean, I wouldn't either, but it was a joke, all right, buddy?
Wow, I really honestly couldn't tell.
Skrunk is perfect for this because he plays Visage and Proud and I don't play that hero and we need to get rid of it because we haven't run it yet and it's an interesting hero to talk about. So Skrunk as our Visage Specialist, explain to us why we like Visage and aggro tri lanes as opposed to other situations.
You even know.
Yeah. Also for context for this conversation, the aggro trial we're actually running The Visage is the important, interesting hero, but we're pairing Ventral Spirit and Juggernaut with it. So those two heroes are less or more interchangeable, especially the carry, like Proud was saying. Like, Jug is his favorite in this position, but you could totally pick a Chaos Knight or like a Lifestealer or something else.
Sven,
in this
situation. Slark. Really, yes. I don't give a fuck. Just do whatever. Anyway, Toxicroak, Christ.
Yeah, so the main reason that you pick Visage is because his Soul Assumption does damage based on how much damage is going on around him. So you want to pair him with in a position that there's going to be a lot of fighting and a lot of damage going around, so you can take full advantage of your Soul Assumption, which is like an insane nuke, like levels 1 to 5. It's super a lot of damage. So you just put him in a place where there's going to be a lot of fighting, and Soul Assumption is super good, and that's pretty much why he's good and aggressive.
Yeah, so it's like 4 second cooldown, and it can just do up to fucking like an insane amount of damage once you got all your squares.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, I haven't heard you call them that in a while.
All my squares.
Yeah, do you try to get max squares up? Which yeah. is your Soul Assumption.
That's the skill. Just, I got my head. Squares. Let's go.
And you can cast it like multiple times in engagements most of the time. So, like, I like to start off, when I play Visage, I like to bring 3 clarities with me, because Soul Assumption costs a lot of mana, especially early on, and you want to be casting it a lot. And so I just bring lots of mana regen with me so I can spam that out, and you just want heroes with you that will cause damage. So Venge is perfect. Like, you stun, you go in with the spin, and that's going to give you full squares, and then your Soul Assumption comes out, and that's a kill on any hero. So that's why we're running that combo.
I would like to say, we know that they are rectangles, not squares, and that squares are rectangles, but rectangles are not squares, but it sounds way more fun if you call them squares.
Yeah, full rectangles is entirely too many syllables. Yes. So Visage is a hero we very rarely see in general. Even in pros, like Lil, who used to play for VP, he's like one of the renowned Visage players, but even like his teams haven't been picking it. The hero like the only time we see the hero, right, is the classic Drow Visage drafts, which, you know, we're not running Drow Visage, but for reference, if you have a Visage draft, Drow is pretty darn good. Doesn't match up super well in the solo safe lane position, though, against a lot of matchups. But anyway, Drow Visage is very good. But
I would like to append another, like, to just kind of really emphasize how insane Soul Assumption is in the kind of tri-v-tri situation. So it's every 110 damage taken by a hero adds 1 square to Visage, and each square does 65 damage. And so if you have like max Soul Assumption or whatever, your thing will do 410 damage. So you'll launch 6 squares to do 410 damage, and then that'll fill up 4 squares. And then 4 seconds later, all that needs to happen is 210 damage to like just to heroes around you, and you'll drop another 400 damage nuke every 4 seconds. So like the first one maybe takes a little bit to build up, but then you're fucking chain gunning that shit, and it's just
also his first ability, what is that shit called?
Grave chill
is really good in aggro tri lanes as well, because you can get off like 4 auto attacks guaranteed when you cast it on someone, and if you're like being the ones running at them, they're not gonna try to trade with you, so you just get like, you just auto attack once, so Grave Chill, and then you like run past them because they're slowed, and you get a huge
It's 32% slow, 32% fucking boost to you. So in total, that's like a 64% move speed swing, and that's like max level Drow arrows, even like post buff.
Yeah, hell yeah! So you're just running past them, and then you're sitting there auto attacking them, hoping to build up max level Assumption, and when you get it, you cast it, and it's probably the best level 1 nuke in the game, and.
It's just like auto attacks are so good early game. So like even just the fact that you get like a power treads worth of attack speed or like at level 1 on Visage is super strong.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of falls back on one of the like easiest pieces of advice that's so valuable, is that in the early game, slows are better, and in the mid to late game, stuns are better. And obviously, you know, there's some semantic arguments for like certain things, but in general, in these early engagements, an ability like Grave Chill is going to give you way more than like a very short stun will, just because your auto attacks count for so much more, like Proud said. So Grave Chill is also like, I don't know what it is about Visage, but I feel like I only run into really good Visage players. Like, it's not a hero that people randomly pick. And so when I get like beaten by a Visage, I feel like I get manhandled by like Grave Chill in the early game and then Bats in the mid to late game. And it's a rough life playing against a good Visage player. So hopefully that works out today.
Yeah, I mean, it's a super good hero, and people don't like, a lot of people don't know how to play against him. So that can really like add to it. So like if I see a Lion picker on the other team, I like love picking Visage because Lion has such a hard time dealing with like birds running at him and he can't stun them. And if he starts auto attacking them, he's just going to like die super hard. So these heroes with like direct stuns, but they're squishy and they can't deal with the birds that well, he'll just punish them super hard.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's sick good against Lion. Like Shadow Shaman too. You just fucking terrified.
Yeah. You can solo kill. Like you can literally solo kill those heroes in team fights. Like you just focus on their supports. And the other thing with Visage is like once you get a medallion on him, typically if your lane is going really well and you're getting kills because just the nature of Soul Assumption, you cast it last, so you typically get the kills a lot of
time. Like an oracle.
Yeah, so you're kill stealing your carry and he's getting mad, but you don't give a fuck because you just got your medallion and level 6. And when you get your medallion, it's a huge power spike because it synergizes extremely well with your birds. If you can get that timing together, medallion and 6, you can just hide in the trees by the side shop, wait for anyone to come and solo kill them. It's like a move I pull all the time, and people don't expect it. So it's, birds are really insane if you can micro them well.
If you want to have fun with your Visage player, build a Bloodthorn and then put it on Roche and then have the birds attack Roche and laugh your fucking ass off.
It looks like a Korean MMO with the amount of numbers popping up.
I have never seen that, honestly.
You did that. I was Klinx and he was Visage and I had Deso plus Bloodthorn on Roche and the birds just fucking soloed it. It was hilarious.
Oh my god. Yeah, so Visage definitely has a lot of potential, and especially paired with a hero like Venge, which we'll be doing today. Obviously, Visage birds do physical damage, so you want to pair that with you know, a lot of minus armor. So that's why Medallion and heroes that accent that strategy work so well with that. So what would you say is like the primary reason we don't see Visage nearly as much as like the hero's potential? Do you think it's solely because like the hero is such a like specialist hero, like you know, those heroes where you need to play 100 games of it to like really be good at it, compared to a hero like Lion, for instance, where it's like, all right, I played 5 games and I'm fine.
Yeah, you can watch someone play Lion and be like, oh, I understand that hero. But if you watch someone play Visage and like for the first time, you're like, I don't know, like what's going on? But he's just not as intuitive. And like his, I don't know if this is a reason, but like his skills have a lot of words. So it's a lot of reading. And I know some Dota players don't like to read skills.
especially his third skill. The Gravekeeper's Cloak, which
that's a weird Visage, one we haven't even talked about.
Yeah, Visage used to be a strength hero in Dota 1 for a long time, and I was terrible at Dota 1, to be fair, but Visage was the first hero I ever got beyond godlike on, and that was because Visage was a tank that you built Radiance on, so the hero is very different now. Anyway.
I mean, I don't even level Gravekeeper's Cloak anymore. I just get 2 points in Soul Assumption, 3 points, 2 points in Grave Chill, 3 points in Soul Assumption. Then I get my ulti, then I get my fourth point in Soul Assumption. Then I decide, usually I start leveling up Gravekeeper's Cloak after that, but I just like resign to the fact that I'm a squishy hero that is like a glass cannon most of the time. Yep. And I would rather just have maximum offensive potential than level up his Gravekeeper's Cloak. Although it can be really good late game. I mean, it's good against like Finger of Death and like heavy burst damage things because it absorbs magic damage as well. But overall, it's not the main appeal of the hero by any means.
I have a couple theories on why Visage is like not good in general right now. Like if you think about what you need a support to do in terms of like a defensive tri-lane, like you want to be able to zone the offlaner, which Visage can actually do pretty well. But you want them to be able to like TP react to something. And if Visage TP reacts, he doesn't have a hard disable that'll come right out.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have the ability to like, it's like, you can't even like TP react and then do damage, you know? You TP react and then you have to wait for damage to happen before you can Soul Assumption. And then you also can't really zone offlaners because you need a lot of damage to happen to them before you can Soul Assumption. So it's hard to get kills in a defensive tri-lane. Ganking isn't as great as like, I don't know, like a witch doctor or whatever, and you're not like a defensive support. Like he just doesn't really do what you need a single support to do. But when you run an aggro tri-lane, like all you really need is the damage or him to synergize with what other support you have in the carry.
Yeah, and I think the reason a lot of people don't pick him is because obviously he's a micro hero, which people tend to shy away from, but also he's super punished if you don't micro well. Like, those birds will, even though they're powerful, they die in like three hits, two hits. And
they feed gold.
They give 100 gold. And yeah, so like you can really feed the enemies a lot of gold if you're not careful with it. And I think people just like, they don't want to put in the effort to learn that. And it's just something that they know that they're going to have a hard time with, and they're probably going to lose a lot of games if they start playing him when they first start. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, that's why I don't play Visage, honestly. I've played like, I don't know. I don't have my Dota buff up right now. I've probably played like 8 to 10 Visage games. Cause like, I think the hero's really cool, but like, I'm not a micro player. Maybe I didn't play enough StarCraft, but I've tried and failed. Like, when you do nice things, you're like, wow, I'm amazing at this hero. And then you like feed a bunch of birds. You're like, boy, I need to play Rubick or like something.
Yeah. I mean, it happens to everyone. You accidentally feed your birds like right after you resummon, and then you don't have them for 150 seconds. And then like so much of your hero is gone at that point. So it really punishes you hard.
Yeah, I think that's like the biggest thing, honestly. When I'm playing against or with Visages, like any hero that is so like dependent on a single cooldown, you're obviously concerned, right? Whether it's like an Enigma or a Tidehunter, you know, you're playing around that one thing, but Visage is so reliant on birds for like doing anything that if it's like, all right, I accidentally fed birds and now I'm not useful for like the next 2 minutes. It's not a situation you want to be in, especially from your supports. Like, it's one thing to have a core. So one of the main reasons I don't think of Visage as like a top tier hero right now is, I mean, it's primarily for what Proud said. Like, I want instant reactions, and Visage, like a lot of other supports, is not capable of that. So if anything, he's like, you know, you pick a hero like Venge that has a secure ability to accomplish goals, and then you pick the Visage, which is like the flavor support, I guess, that can't TP react. So that's definitely something that bothers me. And again, it kind of falls back to my mentality on Dota, in that I like consistency, and I'd rather have like a Venge that can just stun every so often compared to a Visage where it's like, right, his stun is good, but like you might miss it and then you're screwed.
Or your birds might be dead, or they might be across the map, etc.
Or they might not have damage because you hit things with them 6 times.
You have to manage the damage on your birds so that you have them for ganks and stuff like that.
Your stun's not up because you had to refresh them because you just killed a camp and you weren't expecting to need the stun immediately.
I feel like that's the hardest thing about Visage. If you're like a new person learning Visage, is like, I'm pretty sure I played like multiple Visage games before I found out that they reduce damage every hit. So if you're listening to this podcast,
it's a ton too.
Yeah, they do like basically nothing. It goes down to 15 damage, right? At the like when they have no charges up, it goes down to 15, which is nothing pretty much. Like when you have armor, like it doesn't even, like it's not even enough to cancel a blink dagger. So that's something to learn and internalize, and that would take a while.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly what it is, but their first couple hits that they do are extremely buff. I think it's like 180.
It's 60 or something. 60, 100, 140.
Yeah, so you have huge bursts with your birds, like when they are recently refreshed, and also they just have a 1.5 second AoE stun, which is like incredibly powerful if you get it off in the right situations.
Yeah,
like,
and you have two.
I had a game the other day. Yeah, you have two of them, and then you get Ags, and you have three of them. So that's 4.5 seconds AoE stun. Like, it can be insanely powerful if you just get it off in the right situation. Like, I had a game, I think yesterday, we were playing, and Tide ravaged on everybody. And so it just gave me the time to set it up and get, like, a three-man double stomp. And, I mean, that's crazy. So it makes a huge difference. And that's what people are always, like, impressed by, is, like, the multi-hero stomps with the birds and stuff like that.
So we touched on Visage, why people pick him and we don't pick him, but to get into like the actual meat of the hero, what is your, I mean, we already talked about skill build, but what is the item build? I mean, obviously we already kind of touched on like the focus on like a really early medallion, especially in the context of an aggro tri lane with the Vengeful Spirit and a Jug, and also Grave Chill accents the fact that Jug is gonna be rushing phase boots. That's another like one of those little synergies that actually ends up making a big difference. But what is the like item build overall?
Well, okay, so it used to just be So you want to go Tranquils most game just to increase your roaming, but you can also go Arcane Boots. I think that's really good in a lot of games. If you need a pair of Arcane Boots, definitely get them. You can also go Brown Boots. I mean, the boots are pretty, you just adapt to the game with those, but you definitely want the Medallion up ASAP. It's going to help your team with Roche, and it's going to help secure hero kills. It also helps with pushing. You put Medallion on the creep, it takes like a lot more tower hits before it dies. So what I've been doing lately is just rushing the Solar Crest right away. I think Solar Crest is awesome for when your team is on a clock and you want to push. So you have your Sieging Hero go up, you Solar Crest them. It adds a huge boost to like your frontliner. So that's what I've been doing since that item came out. Before that, it used to just be Medallion into Ags. Ags is like super good on her. You get a third bird. So it's just, you know, makes your ult a third better or whatever.
Well, and 50%
better. 50%
better,
that's it. Yeah. And so Ags is definitely core on her. You want to get Ags. But a lot of people like to go Atos as well, so that you can Grave Chill Atos and just like zoom past someone while they're incredibly slowed. So I think any combination of your first three items being Medallion, Solar Crest, Atos, or Ags is fine. I don't know what I wouldn't really get many items besides that, though. I feel like those are all synergized really well.
I feel like,
I don't know. Like, I feel like I wanted to bring you on because I wanted the Skrunk version of Visage, and the Skrunk version of Visage that I remember had a lot more Maelstroms and ACs involved.
Yeah, so you can go Maelstrom as well. I started doing this mostly like after I get Ags, though. So like back in the day, you would just get Medallion Ags, and then it was like you start getting all this gold, then I would just go right.
You had every fucking kill, you piece of shit.
Yeah, because you have like 13 kills. But like now getting Solar Crest Ags is like, it takes a lot longer. So any item you get after that, the game is usually going to be like almost decided at that point. But yeah, I think AC is great because you get the negative armor aura when you're going into like insane luxury items. You just stack up on more negative armor. And I really love Maelstrom just because it gets your soul assumption charges up really quickly in team fights, and you can just spam out all the time. Yeah, so you just sit there auto attacking, and
it's worth noting that Visage does have a auto attack steroid in Grave Chill. None of this shit. I'm being very facetious right now, but at the same time, like when Skrunk was very ahead on Visage, there were games where like, you know, well, the carry would die and like someone would pop a BKB, but it'd be like, all right, we still got Visage fucking throwing autos and it's not doing nothing.
Yeah, he hits insanely hard. Like, especially that's why people pair him with Drow too. That will make his auto attacks hit really hard.
Oh, so. It's good. It's it exists.
Yeah. I mean, right. I could see you getting like Vlad's and other aura items if you really wanted to, but nah, I mean.
Yeah, generally, I see a lot of auras, like I see a lot of Shivas, and other items like that. Do you ever like? I was gonna say in the super late game, I feel like a refresher would be so good, just so that like you could suicide birds just to do stuff, and then like have an immediate resummon. I don't imagine that's like that's like a super late game, like the game's gone to 70 minutes or whatever. But I feel like that has some potential, but that's like relatively inapplicable.
It would be pretty good, I guess, but like one of the most powerful things you do on Visage, you can do on Visage, is like you send all your birds at someone, you get their initial burst damage, and then you stomp, you immediately resummon your birds and get another round of damage, because when you resummon, they go back to full damage. So like that is a very aggressive move you can do and deal a ton of damage in team fights. So like if you notice like, oh, this team fight's starting to get lost, we really need to kill their carry, you can pull that move off. It's just risky, because if your birds die after you do that, you're totally fucked. So it's not something you want to do often, but if you have a refresher, you can be a little bit, you can do that like a little bit more liberally, and you can even do it three times. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it could be a thing, that's for sure.
What about, this will be my last weird suggestion before we kind of break into our game. What about Octarine Core? Because just thinking about Soul Assumption, right? 4 second cooldown, bring that down to 3. Is it like, it just makes me think of like Oracle. Like Oracle has all that burst because his cooldown is so low, even before Ags. And I feel like Octarine Core Soul Assumption would be so good to just spam. And like you could have Grave Chill on multiple people and your bird summons would be that much faster.
Yeah, I mean, it could be pretty insane.
But you don't leech life off of your bird damage.
That's still Soul Stone. I was like, man, Grave Chill is also 4 second cooldown. No, Grave Chill is a 10 second cooldown.
Yeah, but yeah, that bring it down to 7.5, yo.
Yeah, and the 6 second duration, you would not have that on multiple people.
You would have your refresher too, all right?
Yeah.
No, I think
that would be lower.
You just never see Visage getting this level of farm because it's a support hero most of the time.
Yeah, unless you never see Visage.
You see a Visage, and like if he goes beyond his eggs, you're like, oh, he's fat, you know?
Yeah.
But it's a luxury. I've seen people talking about how Visage could be a potential mid hero. Like there is a thread on True Dota 2 about how people are thinking Visage is like a mid hero now. So I don't know. It could be a thing, but
I feel like Octarine would just suck because it doesn't like it does. Your birds don't stun faster. Like all it helps your birds for is like resummoning them. But that's still like even with an Octarine, that's a committal move, right?
Yeah.
Like I don't think I would ever go Octarine. I think you're stupid for suggesting it.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. I think really, so this is actually my last point, but I think it's a good point. Our team actually runs Visage as a carry in some of our aggro trialing situations. Like generally, like you were talking about earlier, Proud, we'll run that like LD safe lane, whatever mid, like Invoker, Death Prophet, etc. And then on our aggro trialing, we'll run like, let's say like Venge, Visage, and like, I don't know, Treant Protector, or Kunkka, or like whatever. Yeah. And then the Visage is actually farming, so in this situation, obviously, we'll be running Jug, Venge, and Visage. So Jug is going to be the one farming. But in that aggro trial lane situation where we run it as a core, then you're going to be getting that many more items. Granted, you know, our game plans generally are to end the game early enough that, like, it's totally fine and, like, it doesn't really matter who's, like, a late game carry or whatever. But thinking of it from, like, the mid perspective, that maybe that's the way to play the hero. And, like, yeah, you just got to, like, get a bunch of farm.
The weird thing about core Visage is like
core players don't play it.
Well, that and also like, well, Fear played it like mid once at ESL.
No, oh, dude, right. Fear played safely in Visage like 3 times in a tournament.
Yeah,
he did it a lot at one of the summits, and I know he did it at ESL.
Yeah, it's good. Like Visage with farm is no doubt good. It's just he has trouble farming. He's good at farming the lane in like the first 10 minutes. He can obviously keep up with anyone there, but once there start being wave pushes that you need to go clear out, Vicious is not good at clearing waves. He wants to be in position to fight like with his birds in tucked away in like interesting positions where you can get them on the enemy. So if he's like in a lane farming, like you guys mentioned about how he's so slow to respond to stuff. So that's where one of the points where core Visage really falls off is like pushing out.
I would say if you want like a core Visage, you want to pair it with someone like a Sand King who's like a support that can really like suck up all the farm on the map if he has the opportunity to.
Yeah,
that's an idea for an aggro trialing. Sand King Venge Visage. All right.
I want to say about aggro tri lanes. One thing that when we used to run aggro tri lanes that always pissed me off because you kids fuck it up all the fucking time is you need like we address the side pull and that it kind of exists, but you need to side pull. You can't not do that. If you were doing an aggro tri lane, side pull every chance you get. Like if you're just gonna let it go to their tower or whatever, or you're letting the creep wave stay stationary. You trade experience. Like you can get more. Keep side pulling. Force them to contest your pull, and that's where you're gonna get kills from if they're playing sheepish. Like, don't let it be an even lane if you're stronger than them. Don't let them fucking not fight. Force the fight, pull the lane repeatedly. That's your fucking hard camp. They have a shitty safe lane camp. Pull the hard camp.
Yeah, and don't forget, if they're running, like, a safe lane or, like, a Drow or a Medusa or some ranged hero, they can't buy a stout shield and efficiently. And tanking creeps under tower sucks. Like, a Drow will actually get rolled because, like, they're not going to do enough damage to efficiently hit the creeps. They're going to have to kite them around. They're not going to have opportunities to deal with stuff. And if you block their pull too, like, the game is just over. So, on that note, let's hop into our game. I'm looking forward to it. We have had a lot of success with this. For the VOD today, actually, it's going to be quite exciting. We're going to be playing with our 5 people. So our full team, I assume, it'll probably be Flub and Vafa or some combination, maybe with Fafnir. So that'll be exciting. So if you want to like listen to our team comms, that'll help out a lot. Again, aggro trials are more suited to like playing in a 5-stack. Like this is not something that we would do in like a in like a party queue situation where there's just three of us, or like God forbid if you're in solo queue, never be like, hey, let's aggro tri-lane, because you will lose, even unless you're like in like 6k queue, I guess, and then people are like, oh, okay, good idea. But generally, like, I've been convinced to do this in solo queue, and like, you just lose because it requires a certain degree of coordination. So on that note, hopefully you enjoy the VOD today, because I think it'll be more exciting than usual, although they're always really good, to be fair. So yeah, that's about that. So thanks for listening, and I'm very excited to see you after the break, kind listener. All right, hello everyone, we're back. We have just completed our game, and it was a fun one, I would say. What did you guys think?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's good.
We're not trying to trick anybody today. Yeah. We're going to be upfront. We won our game. It was a good time. We won in a convincing fashion, I would say.
Yeah.
So during the VOD, I was just contemplating life, you know, as one does. And it was a game that, like, we did our aggro tri lane, but it was kind of like, I describe it as a bloodbath. But I think overall, like, the whole reason we won the game was like a clear and concise game plan. And like, we would take an objective, then move to another objective, and move to another thing. So like, we had a clear like path towards winning, and we accomplished that, which is nice. Whereas, you know, we could have very easily not done that and just putzed around for 45 minutes, but instead we like,
can won you not the game. Say putz on our podcast?
I'm sorry, I forgot. No racial slurs.
We'll edit that.
Yep. All right. So about the actual lane, how did you guys feel about it? It kind of, like, it's, I said, rocky, I think it evolved. Yeah. So we had instantly as the game began, it was a 5v5 fight at top rune, and Skrunk, you got 2 kills, correct?
Yeah, I did.
And the enemy team, I think, got a few kills as
they
well.
They got first blood though.
And... yeah, and then a kill on me.
Yeah. Actually, before this, we will explain the team. So we obviously had Vengeful Spirit, Visage, Juggernaut. Our mid lane, played by Vafa, was Windranger. And our safe lane, which is effectively an off lane, was played by Bristleback, who is a good example of a hero that wouldn't do very well in a traditional solo off lane, but does very well in a situation like this where he's placed against another off laner. So the other team ran an off lane Phoenix, which is a throwback, I suppose. They had a middle... Mirana, and their safe lane tri lane was Rubick, Axe, and Wisp, which was quite annoying to deal with. I think that's like the key word I'd use. We just kept fighting into it, right? And we would fight into it, and like, we would just get spun a bunch. Axe can call Juggernaut while he's spinning, and Wisp really saves a lot of people, not surprisingly, because our future Arcana owner is quite good at saving people. So
already calling it.
I can't wait, dude. I want, mostly I just hate that everybody's complaining about Io getting an Arcana, so I just want him to win. And I
want him to win too.
Yeah. I think it's cool.
I feel like a major part of our lane not going well is like the fact that we didn't even start doing the lane until 2 minutes in, like,
yeah,
a lot of shit was happening. I'm not sure how much of it, like, I'm kind of rewatching it, and like, at some point I think we could have like moved back to top faster, but like, I was solo top for about like after the kills had started for like almost a full minute before you guys started walking up here, and then like, you went to go ward or something, and I just like wasn't aware of what was going on, and I just like died.
I was fighting.
I know you were fighting for a long time, and then like, Sam respawned, and he like ran to you guys, and then went to like ward or something, and I had like died by that time. I just didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, there were like remnants of the rune fight for like another like minute, because the Mirana and the Io escaped the rune fight very low, and each of them were like running around in our woods, and like, I remember I was trying to head off the Mirana. And then Skrunk came in like the other direction, and it was a whole messy thing. But you're definitely right that our aggro tri-lane definitely did not start as an aggro tri-lane. It started as an offlane Juggernaut that ended up being supplemented by 2 other heroes. But once we actually got into like the laning phase, as so to speak, we took a couple like not so great fights, but Skrunk, you got a couple kills, and eventually it kind of normalized, and we just kind of traded a bunch. And then we ended up having to roam around, because like I said, this game was so aggressive, but I think it was interesting.
Well, we were all like, after that fight happened, I was debating whether or not to go back and heal or just pop Clarity Salve. And I chose to pop Clarity Salve, but I was never in like full fighting shape from the start of the lane. I was always a little bit low on mana, and I wasn't able to harass right off the bat because I did pop the Clarity. So I kind of just had to stay back. And so
yeah,
we were kind of like, we were kind of disorganized with when we were going, and our resources were like going off in different directions. And so like, once we like got it all together and we were like, okay, and we were able to kill the axe like around level 4, we were fine. But before that, it was pretty rough because, you know, axe spinning on your spin basically.
Yeah.
Like
the real big thing is like, I don't know how to best say it, but like, you wouldn't want to, if we weren't forced to run an aggro tri-lane and we knew that they wanted to safe lane an axe, like,
yeah.
Like the answer to safe lane axe is not aggro tri-lane. It's to accept that, you know, whatever happens, happens, and then you run an off laner and like, you know, worst come to worst, you let an axe free farm, and that's totally cool. But yeah, so we kind of like, you know, you want to do an aggro tri-lane to punish, but in this R situation, we were trying to punish a safe lane axe, which isn't, that's not something you punish. That's something you like exploit, if that makes sense. Yeah.
And that's something like you pick to punish an aggro trial and is like, all right, you guys are going to aggro against us. We're going to fight you and we're going to come out ahead.
Yeah. Like a wisp charged axe that's in the front line and you're like, our kill opportunity is I spin and stand next to someone. Like that's pretty hard to kill someone being overcharged and spinning at you when you're spinning on them. Yeah. A lot of spinning.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure.
Eventually though, we were able to force them off the creep wave. The axe couldn't farm anymore. Like, yeah. I think one of his supports rotated, and then we had so much kill potential on both of their supports, and
yeah,
it was good from there. I think that we could have got the lane back in our favor sooner. There was a gank where I wrapped around from the river, and I was going, and I said, like, okay, ready, basically, and then you guys went in, but I was kind of too far. I should have been saying, like, wait, hold on. And I think that gank would have gone better if I had communicated that.
That all said though, there's like no point where I'm more than 100 net. Like I am up 100 net worth on Axe right now, like at more or less the 5 minute mark when I'm 0-3. So when it's all said and done, like we did pretty decently. Like even though we died all these times, like our lane had enough like just passive lane presence that they had to go in for the kill or not at all.
And yeah, well, I got like a ton of XP and gold. Because I survived for the most part. Like, I got the double kill at the start, and then I survived for a few kills. So I had really early tranquils, and that obviously helped.
Yeah, well... Like,
give you tranquils before I have my phase. I mean, I could get them now, but I got a ring of health. But, yeah, so that's good.
Yeah, thinking about, like, the whole issue of, like, farming, where you're talking about how you, the jug and the axe, are relatively equal, is that, you know, in a lot of games we think of, like, oh, well, you're getting killed, whatever, but... In the early game, kills are a lot more about like lane domination and like map control than it is about actual money. Like you gain proportionally so much more money just from killing like 6 creeps than you do from killing a hero, you know, with the exception of first blood. So Axe like obviously couldn't farm a ton of creeps because he was just getting punched a bunch. And like, yeah, sure, he was fighting us like he would get kills, but those kills are only worth like 200 gold and it's split between 3 people. And it's like, all right, whatever. So...
Then the lane would be pushing in our favor because he's spinning on the creep waves, and then we just farm under the tower.
Yeah, and then we res.
Come out ahead.
Exactly. Then we res, and they're all like half mana and like, well, high health because it was like a wisp lane. But they all like had expended a bunch of resources, and even though we were dead, that means we come back fresh and we can punish them and trade and reestablish lane dominance. So it was very back and forth lane, but in the end, we came out ahead, especially because we are running like an actual carry, like a juggernaut. And they, even though they were fighting us and coming out ahead sometimes, they were not running any form of core that was going to equal out any of our cores, whether it was the Bristle, the Wind, or the Juggernaut.
Yeah.
And so it all kind of worked out in our favor.
I would say, like, about the early game, like, I just kind of rewatched that whole scuffle, and, like, there was that time where they were, like, kind of low in our jungle or whatever, but during that whole situation, like, Sultan wasn't in lane last hitting, and like he missed like a full wave of experience in CS, and like our support's also like everyone just kind of traded wasting time, but like getting the kill wasn't super easy. And I think that like we should have kind of known that like even if we did get that kill, it would have come at the expense of laning. And if we didn't go for it at all, they would have had to like walk back across the map from our side, and like they still would have been low on health and mana and that sort of thing. So like in these early game engagements, it's normally really beneficial to just say fuck off and then get to the lane before they do.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. It was definitely one of the messier intros to a game I've seen recently. Generally, those 5-man fights at the beginning of the game don't like drag on for an extra minute and aren't quite so bloodbathy, unless there's like an alchemist in the game and people are really fighting over it. So then continuing on for the rest of the game, basically the way it went was we just very clearly outlined like, all right, I'm getting an item here. And now every new item, we would take a tower, or take Roche, or take a tier two, or we had a couple smokes, but that was less of a priority because we... You know, our lineup was very good at fighting directly into them, and they had to come in on us. So, like, the smoke wasn't as relevant. Like, it wasn't one of those pick-off games. Especially because they were grouped up often. And, like, it's really hard to smoke when the enemy team is an IO. Because, like, all right, we smoke on one of them, and it's like, all right, IO relocates an axe in or whatever. I think that's, like, a huge advantage. And the Tuesday show, they talk a lot about team building. And this is a very good example if you skim through the VOD of, like, you know, in a pub game, it's hard to like, you know, people always say like wrangling cats, but it's a huge advantage if like our team is coordinated and you could just be like, all right, we just got mechanism on Bristleback. Let's go take a tier one. Let's go take a tier two. Oh, we just got a Desolator on Windranger. Okay, let's go gank. Let's go do X, Y, and Z. So this was really a victory rooted in that. And like, obviously the other team was a 5-stack as well. So it's not like there was some like unfair Overwatch-esque advantage, but I was pretty happy with that aspect, especially, and granted we are like a team and we play together, so that helps, but it was interesting overall. I was pretty happy with the performance.
Well, the big deal is like Bafa pushed mid when we were fighting at some point, and then after he got the mid tier one, it freed him up to come top, and like we just went and took all the tier ones. Then we have a huge advantage. And like a lot of that game, I was just sitting waiting for them to go on someone because I knew that they had to with their team comp with Axe and everything. So I would just sit bottom, sit behind, like, and everyone was farming for us. So it made it, it was a pretty like straightforward game, honestly. And like I didn't even do like anything on Visage. I just like cast Soul Assumption and my Burn Micro was pretty shit. And I still like did my job and had a lot of impact just because I got like, I just sent my birds on people and I Soul Assumption. So anyone wanting to play Visage out there, it's really not that hard and you should try it.
Sorry, you can go.
I was going to say, I feel like Visage Venge is honestly really good together because, like, anytime we did a smoke and we just swapped someone in, like, we instantly got all the squares. Like, they'd swap in and we wouldn't even have to blow anything. Just, like, auto attacks, we get the squares up. We Soul Assumption someone. That gets the kill. Soul Assumption's back to, like, you know, over half squares. And then if they're going to react to our smoke at all, like, we haven't really burned anything. Soul Assumption's up in 2 seconds and, like, it's ready to fucking go from there. Like just the swap in, and then it's really hard to engage into Visage is just like so good because it means like as soon as you swap someone in, the fight is happening on our territory, not theirs. So they have to go into Visage if we initiate with the swap.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the game only ended up being like 33 minutes, so there wasn't like a lot of those late game opportunities for huge swaps or anything. But we definitely saw that, just like you said, was the Visage Venge is a very strong combination. And it's also a nice combination in that it has synergy, and we talk about this all the time with our duel, with our combos on a regular week, is it has a nice synergy where it works together, but it doesn't rely on one another necessarily, right? Each individual hero does their own thing, but they do extra things when paired together. So that's like, this is a very good example of a very secure combo, where even though Visage is like kind of a little off-the-wall pick, uncommon thing, it's a very like secure, all right, you know, the hero is going to be good regardless of whether Venge is there or not. So it definitely worked out. I think going all the way back to one of Skrunk's points was, and with the flow of this game was, and this could be a segment in and of itself, honestly, but identifying win conditions is a very important thing. And the enemy team, their like win condition is basically they keep fighting at us, and we lose a bunch of fights in a row, and we lose map control, and then we have a greedier team, so we lose and we can't defend against them. Whereas our win condition was we just got to keep up our like farm and at least equally farm them, if not over farm them, keep our map control, and we like naturally outscale and outcarry them. And that's pretty much our win condition, right?
Yeah, and just then we just push with Healing Ward and a fucking like Deso on a Ags Windrunner.
Exactly. Yeah,
like, and we have a mech and they didn't have one. So like it's insanely hard for them to fight. Like we had Bristleback with the Aura build, and
yeah,
it just helped so much.
Yeah. I just want to add, like, also, like, yeah, our aggro trial lane. Yeah, that I mean, like, that was whatever, but also that allowed us to, like, we knew that we were going to have the solo safe lane against whatever they had, and they had, like, an Axe, they had a Phoenix, they had a Mirana, and we're like, okay, no matter which one of those it is, like, it's probably the Mirana mid, probably the Phoenix off lane, so we just picked the Bristleback, and, like, even if our lane doesn't go that well, the Bristleback had, like, over 700 more net worth than, like, our mid hero did at about 5 minutes or so. So even if our lane didn't go so well, even if mid didn't go so well, we did have this Bristleback to just kind of act as an anchor in any team fight that we had, and just keep us in it, especially with the Vanguard mechanism build, where like no matter how bad our shit goes, he can be in the middle of the fight, he can mech us up, he can mana boot us, he can keep us in it.
Mm-hmm.
Just like being able to plan your 1v1 matchup, very low resource commitment, and they have to change out a lot of shit to be able to respond to it.
Absolutely. So I think my like closing note would be this game was a good example of throwing off the other team with a weird aggro tri-lane strat, and more importantly, it's an example of, you know, the value you get from playing in a consistent five stack and having like a team and practicing stuff like aggro tri-lanes. And even when it doesn't go super well, like we were talking about in like the first few minutes, you can still, like, you know, commit to it, and it's good practice, and it's a good time, honestly. It's fun. And also, like, anything like this, it just builds teamwork and communication and being able to clearly take objectives, etc.
Yeah.
So any closing notes from you guys before I hop into plugs?
I would just say, like, another thing to look at is the items that you're building to be able to take objectives and the heroes that you have. You want to always make sure that you have these tools to take Roche, to take towers. In our case, it was the mech, so we could sustain fight them towards their objectives. And it was the Deso on Windrender. And that like really upped our pushing, and was like, that Deso is a huge part of our strategy along with the medallion. So that was one of the big reasons we were able to take all those objectives so smoothly. So just always think about that when you're building a team, and think about how your items are going to work together.
Yeah, and that also kind of falls back to win conditions. It's like, all right, if we were running a push strat, you know, you're going to be building a Desolator on your Wind Ranger, not a Maelstrom, for instance. Like, those kind of things can drastically affect things. Or, like, we had a great Roche lineup, like you said, so that's why, you know, certain items are better than others. Proud, what about you? Any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I want to go back to what you were talking about on the, like, very succinctly taking objectives and that sort of thing. And I want to kind of dial it back to an issue that we were having before, is like when you do super well, like you knock down all of their tier twos. And this was classic when the rubber band kind of mechanic first got in, like you'd beat the shit out of someone, you take all their towers, and then you get wiped once and you lose. And that still exists to a point today. But you just have to be super, super conscious of it. And the way that it used to happen to us is we would take all of their objectives or whatever, take all their tier ones, take all their tier twos, whatever. And then we would go push and be super aggressive and eventually get punished. Cause like if they're staying in their base and they are, or they're not pushing too aggressively, and we're like, man, we got to do something. This is Dota 2. It's not a pub. We're a team. We're coordinated. We're talking. We should be saying, what are we going to do next? And you don't know what you want to do, so you just push. Cause I don't fucking know. And then
it's the last objective.
Yeah, it blows up in your face. So one major thing is if all of your tier ones are up, just don't do shit and wait for them to push your tier ones. Farm and wait for them to push your tier ones. If you have two tier ones, if you still have your mid tier one, just don't do shit and wait for them to, like, the defender's advantage exists at any point in the game in Dota 2. So just wait for them to do that. Unless they have an insane ganking lineup. Like they had a Wisp. And at one point I was like, yeah, don't push. They have a Wisp. Let's not do anything dumb. Like wait for them to try to take our tier one, stay in defensive posture and like out farm them. Just not having a huge advantage and then finding a way to throw it away is a big thing that teams really have to learn how to overcome. And really just even in your pub. So, you know, we take a Rax and then we still have Aegis. We have Healing Ward up soon, but we're just like, all right, let's just fuck off for a sec. Let's chill. Get our, like, we just got a shit ton of objectives, but we haven't yet turned it into items. So make sure after you get a huge advantage, turn it from a gold advantage into an actual functional advantage and then work off of that. Don't just go objective to objective before you actually cash in.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot easier to throw than it is to, it's a lot easier to throw than it is to take advantage of the other team throwing.
Okay.
Yep. All right. So on that note, we are going to hop into plugs. You can watch the video that, or the VOD video, the VOD.
VidiVOD, I think is this called.
VidiVOD. Yeah, on YouTube channel, youtube.com/DontPTV1. That's a numerical one, and it was recorded in my perspective, the Ventral Spirit, and we have it. What?
Wait.
What?
Keep going.
Okay. We have a Twitch channel where if you are watching this, you missed it by a day, but we have in-houses on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern, and those are streamed on twitch.tv/DontPTV, and they're run by some guy named Grindy. Something like that. We have a website, defensethepatients.com. On there is an Amazon banner you can click on to support us. All you got to do is, you know, bookmark it, and it's your, like, it's regular Amazon, but they give us money instead of them, so that helps. Another way to support us is our Patreon, patreon.com/defensethepatients. That is, you know, if you want to throw us $1 or $2, whatever, we understand. And we have an email and Twitters, etc., so that you can get in contact with us. The email is defensethepatients@gmail.com. Twitters, I am @Ursinity. Proud is @ProudDota.
Are we going to read that review? Where the fuck is this thing?
Oh, yeah. Good luck finding that one, buddy.
Dude, I'm trying.
We have @.p_show. I will read these more slowly so that Proud can find the thing that he's looking for.
Found it.
Reddit.com/r/defensethepatients is another way to get in contact with us. And last but not least, you can submit us iTunes reviews like the one Proud is about to read, because they help us. They help us with the recognition, and they bring us to the top of all kinds of lists that I don't even know or concern myself with. But Syphus and Roland tell me, hey, we want iTunes reviews. And I say, yes, sir, I will do that for you. So Proud, read us.
Well, so we got one review from our boy Convex Mirror. Good guy, that man.
I know him.
Yeah. He says, Theorycrafting Thursday with Ursi and Prout and today Skrunk. Hello, Skrunk. Thank you, Skrunk. Is the most informative Dota 2 podcast around. Holy shit, that's praise. The show is entertaining. That's me. That's what I do. The concept is good. That's half Sam, half me. They play a ranked party match to test their theories mid-show, in case you didn't fucking know. And noobs like me, don't talk so down on yourself. Learn something every show, which, I mean, not every show, but most of them. I like, it's a compliment. Thank you. This game is complicated, and they help make sense of it. Thank you so much, Convex Mirror. If you want to write a review, you can flame the shit out of us. As long as there are 5 stars, I will read it. It can be full flame, but just give me the stars. That's what I'm most interested in. Give me the high stars, but I mean, I'll read whatever, dude. Just tell me how beautiful I am, and then call me a piece of shit and spit in my ear.
So before we like are all nice to Skrunk because he graces with his presence, I don't know if you know this, Proud, but back in the day, before I was like a host of the podcast, this is like my main point of shame within .p. Yeah. I wrote an iTunes review about back when it was just Roland and Syphus, and I gave them 4 out of 5 stars for a podcast I'm currently on. I reviewed it 4 out of 5 stars.
Well, that's because they didn't have me yet. I'm the 5th star.
Yeah. Well, that was because when Roland was randoming and ranked, and I was like, yo, I would give you guys 5 stars, but he does that, and I don't like that, so I give him 4 out of 5 stars.
Yeah,
so
now, random and ranked, by the way, you fucking assholes. Yeah.
He doesn't.
We beat a team of randoms in that last
game. Yeah, that's true. They did random, like, 2 of their heroes.
I think it was, 2.
Yeah, it was 2. But, yeah, so don't do that. So, yeah, that's my point of shame, is I rated my own podcast 4 out of 5 stars by accident, like, preemptively. Yeah. So, anyway,
I have way more self-confidence than you, because I would never do that.
I mean, I didn't know I was going to end up hosting this podcast, but
I also have more foresight.
You have a lot more of various things that start with the letters
F-R-E. Calf muscle?
No, he runs a lot. He probably has more calf muscles than I do.
Anyway.
Pretty important. So.
I'm,
how many calf muscles do you have, Skrunk?
A lot. Like,
like a shit ton, or like Joe Dolores?
Like, it's like I used to be fat and then I lost weight, but my calves stayed the same. That's how you get it.
I have calves like baby cows, but not like legs.
Anyway, okay. Skrunk, thank you for joining us on this podcast. It was delightful. I'm glad we can get rid of Visage and I can mark him off our chart, because Proud and I, there was a 0% chance we were going to play Visage.
I would have thrown up if I had to play Visage.
I would have fed. I don't know if I would have thrown up, but I definitely would have fed.
I could only throw up if I was fed.
Okay. All right. So Skrunk, here's your...
Because that's like the biology of it.
Here's a chance to plug, or like, do you have a Twitter you use, or where can people shout at you? Like Discord?
I think I have a Twitter. It's like Skrunk55 or something like that. I retweeted IX Mike for like TI2. That was like my last tweet. He hates on cosmetics, so I like retweeted it because
no cosmetics guy.
Not Skrunk55. I'm looking though.
Skrunk55. Yeah, it's a picture of a giraffe. You can follow me there if you want.
It's not. And, I searched that. It's not Skrunk55.
I don't know. Just look at Growdy tilting, and like it's probably towards me on Twitter somewhere.
How about all right? If somebody would like to ask you Visage questions, they want to learn all of the Visage philosophy. Where do they contact you? Discord?
Oh, no, add me on Steam. It's just Skrunk on Steam. And I'm the only one named Skrunk. You can add me off of Ursinity's friends list if you're friends with him. If not,
that is true.
I don't know what to tell you, but yeah, you can ask me questions about Visage and Tiny and nothing else. No life questions.
Oh,
I'm just kidding.
If you look into the mirror and you punch it until it's broken into 5 pieces and you say Skrunky is a hunky 5 times in a row, he will appear and you can ask any Visage question you desire.
On that note, we're going to close the show. So please don't punch mirrors or ever say that sentence that
Just wrap your hand before you do it so you don't cut your knuckles.
So thanks for listening, and remember,
you're the only one to try it, so
you
gotta be the next one to prove it.
Yeah. If it was your plan, it was our decisions. Take
exactly.
It away, folks.
Bye-bye.
Freedom call! Got my headphones on, ready to go. Got my headphones on, start the show.